guys, Naima Screamer here from Blah Blah Blah. So, I'll admit it. I know a little bit about tech stuff, and I know nothing about sound design. Luckily for me, there's monoprice.com. When I started this podcast, I was using my phone and the Anchor app, and that wasn't giving me everything that I needed to enhance Blah 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 to the level of which I needed to be. So I went to monoprice.com and found this great portable microphone that plugs into my phone and also is a headphone jack as well. So if you're shopping for high quality, affordable electronics and accessories, go to monoprice.com. Monoprice has given me the access to reliable sound equipment and accessories to make podcasting even easier. Monoprice.com. Check it out. Hey guys, what's up? It's Naima Screamer. So it's been a minute since I've published an episode, but fortunately for you, I have a lot of stuff coming up that I'm really excited about. I've been working on, I think it's going to be about three parts of an interview I did with Jimmy Butcher. He is someone I've known for a while, and he is just doing the damn thing. Shoe designing, tattooing, artist, hip-hop connoisseur, hip-hop advocate, just all around very knowledgeable, fun, enthusiastic person. So part one will be published very, very soon. And I just kind of wanted to touch base and let you know what has been happening with me personally. I just been dealing with life and stresses and getting my kids back in school and work, and I recently had a health scare, so that kind of set me back as well. And I struggled in there for a minute with trying to find peace in my mind and trying to find this ability to continue to persevere, even though it seems like everything's against you and the insecurities and anxieties and just life was getting to me. And so I had to step back and reevaluate things. But as my favorite podcast personality, comedian, just life helping person that out in the world, Amanda Seale says, you need to venture to impress yourself. And the only thing that was stopping me was me in a lot of ways. So I think I'm back. I think I'm ready to do this. I've learned some things. I've taken into account, you know, that life isn't perfect. And when you're starting something on your own with no help, because I do this by myself. I publish it, I record it, I edit it. I have no history in sound engineering. I also have to work a full-time job and take care of three children and take care of myself. And I think that we seem to forget that life still happens even when you're creating projects or trying to start your own business or even just trying to facilitate active self-love and taking care of yourself. You know, you still have your day-to-day routine, and we forget in this very everything seems to be easy because we have technology world, that there still has to be somebody behind the scenes creating it. There's somebody behind the scenes putting in extra hours. There's somebody behind the scenes who is sitting around and listening to the same 5-minute segment over and over and over, trying to figure out how to remove background noise because they can't A, afford to pay a sound designer, B, someone hasn't volunteered to be a sound designer or engineer, or C, someone hasn't offered to produce their show. So these are very realistic things that I have to consider. You know, I have to be the sound person, the producer. I have to create the content. I have to come up with the content. I have to also create the social media for this content and figure out how to facilitate that social media and what's best for that. And it's a lot. It's a lot. So we have to not be so damn hard on ourselves. And that's the one thing that I'm doing, is just, I can't be so hard on myself to the point of where I self-sabotage myself to where I give up. And I do appreciate constructive criticism, and I do appreciate anybody lending a voice to how they think I can improve, especially if they've continued to listen to the podcast and they have invested in what I'm trying to do. But sometimes I don't need to hear, oh, if you just do this. You know, it's like, well, if you go criticize and say, I just need this to do this, and you have the access to help, then help. But otherwise, keep your opinion to yourself. That being said, I am really excited about this podcast episode. It's going to come to you in a couple parts, so just be patient. And I really enjoyed talking to Jimmy. We talked for almost 3 hours, and you have to excuse some of the background noise we did do in a cafe. Something I'm learning. You have to learn as you go along. Is that you just kind of try it out, you make it work, and if it doesn't work, then you try something else. But you can't substitute the fact of trying and implementing the idea into action as like as not good enough, because you're out here, you're doing whatever you're doing. So don't allow people to steal from you your personal pride when you put yourself out there about something that you think about, you're passionate about, that's something that fuels you and you want to create and do. Because no, perfection doesn't happen. Perfection isn't real. And you have to start somewhere to get to where you want to go. And trust me, all those podcasts and all those people who are creating things and all those people that are painting and drawing and starting these perfect fitness routines and workout routines, they had to start somewhere. And a small number of us, you know, not us, not myself, but a small number of them have an advantage, have a leg up. But you can't take that away from what you feel lifts you up and you feel as a service to others, especially if it's something to where people can flourish within themselves and find the ability to grow within themselves and not stay stagnant just because of this pressure to be what they're not able to measure up to from others. We can't look at ourselves that way. We have to compete with ourselves and we have to venture to impress ourselves. So I'm venturing to impress my damn self. So I hope you enjoy the first part, and I'm going to be working on the second part to publish, and then maybe the third, I'm not sure. And then I'm going to do a podcast on my own, and I'm just going to think of what I want to talk about, because I got a lot of things to say. And I think maybe more guests are going to be coming up. So I hope that you enjoy episode 9, The Humble and the Hustle. 2 parts, 3 parts, I'm not sure yet, with Jimmy Butcher. And if you are looking for a tattoo, I think that you should check out whatisthebutcher.com. The Butcher prides itself on 100% quality professional tattoo experience, and it's also an art studio that's located in downtown Savannah across from historic River Street. Walking into The Butcher, you already know that it's clean, professional, everybody's friendly, they have access to their artists so that you can find the artist that works with you to create your permanent creation on your body. So check out whatisthebutcher.com for more information and go on downtown to check out 100% quality professional tattoo experience, and also check out some of the art that's there. It's pretty rad. And if you want to see more on Jimmy's work and projects, go to Instagram, go to The Butcher Brand. You can see his shoe designs, you can see his artwork, you can see his tattoos, you can see what he's up to, where he's going, what he's doing, and you can kind of also check out his occasional stories when he shares of him making beats, which are always pretty entertaining to watch. And yes, I'm plugging, I'm making ads, so if anybody out there wants to give me some money, go for it. But this is episode 9, The Humble and the Hustle. I'm Naima Scrima. Thank you so much for listening to Blah Blah Blah. Just be patient with yourself, be patient with you, and just keep plugging away and figuring out what you want to do and take those steps to get there, because the only thing stopping you is you, and the only thing that limits us from being greater for ourselves is this concept that what we're doing isn't good enough because of what we think we don't have. And you already have everything you have because you know how to love and respect and value yourself. Thank you so much. I'll see y'all around. Here we go. And what is today? Today is the 20th. Today is June 20th. This is another episode of Blah Blah Blah. And I have Jimmy Butcher here. Say hi, Jimmy.
What's up?
I just wanted to talk to you, and I want to talk to you really just about the hustle, like the local hustle, and just how living in a small community makes an impact on like your authenticity of yourself. How do you remain humble? How do you hustle with a lot of like pushback from people that are cool in a small town, but at the time hate the small town they're in because they don't think it's enough? Like, because you're an artist, tattooer, businessman, music maker, all around cool guy.
Cat dad.
Cat dad. So how do you How do you stay humble in the hustle?
Well, it's very interesting that you say that because I was having lunch with Jenny yesterday, mm-hmm. and I asked her, do you think I'm humble?
Hmm.
And she said, no.
Shout out to Jenny, his wonderful wife. Why do you think she said no, though?
And we had a good conversation about it because she was like, well, I don't know how you see humble, mm-hmm. but I don't think you're humble. But I don't think you're arrogant. I don't think you're particularly, like, conceited or have a sense of, you know, false sense of accomplishment.
Right.
Humble often is associated with almost a naivety to your own accomplishments.
Mm.
You know, and she was like, you're too confident in what you want and what you're doing.
Right. But is that...
And sure of yourself. Right. You know, and I think that's
just confidence.
Yeah.
That's just confidence. I think when you become arrogantly confident is when you don't allow anybody else to call you out on your bullshit.
Right.
And I think confidence a lot of times gets mistaken as arrogance because it's like, oh, well, who the fuck do you think you are? Mm-hmm. But it's like, yeah, I'm going to be confident in me and what I've accomplished. And I think for me, just being humble in the hustle is like not being arrogant in the hustle.
Yeah, because I might disagree with her and say, well, I think I'm humble because I'm always aware that I have something to learn. And I'm always doing self-work. Mm-hmm. So, for me, I think that, to answer the question, is that it's, I'm constantly looking at myself, analyzing my growth, weighing it against the way people treat me, the way people react to me, the way people treat and react to each other.
Kind of
always in this sociological experiment with understanding how people work and finding empathy for the situation or the other person.
Mm-hmm.
But also just really appreciating everything.
That you've worked for.
Yeah, everything that every accomplishment that comes, being able to be grateful for.
Right.
And, you know, I'm really happy to have and lucky to have such a happy home life.
Right.
So I find that.
Do you think that's key in having a happy home life versus, do you think you have to have the happy home life first, or do you have to have a happy home life within yourself first?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's steps. I think at first, you know, it's, I listened to an interview a few months ago with Rob Dyrdek, where he explained something that I thought was really valuable, and I've been talking to some of my other friends about, and he said he was always looking for the right person for him to make him settle down, to make him find the things in his in him that would be perfect for someone else.
Okay.
And it was failure after failure after failure because it wasn't until he realized he needed to be perfect for himself first.
Right.
Before someone like that would come in and it would work out.
And that's kind of where I was in after this breakup because I realized like I was putting so much emphasis on being what I thought was complete again after a failed marriage. I thought I was like, man, I'm messing up. I have friends, I have a job, I have a career, I have my interests, I have my children. But on the other side of it, I was like, I don't have this special person to complete me. And then I went, wait a minute, bitch, you gotta complete yourself first in order to be your best for somebody else. Because if I'm constantly looking for somebody else to complete me, how do I know if I don't have anything, if I'm okay?
Yeah.
Because if I don't have me, then it doesn't matter who's there. You know?
Like, I look at a lot of things that same way. I look at a lot of things like, okay, if without this, how would I do? Whether it's...
Would I still do what I do?
Yeah, whether it's a significant other, whether it's food or substance, whether it's alcohol or weed or whatever it is.
Right.
I'm always asking myself, and also, you know, sometimes asking other people, if you're stranded on a desert island without any of your creature comforts, how do you think you would manage? And does that scare you? Like, if you can't have this and this and this, or this person, how are you going to get along? And if that scares you, you have some self-work to do.
Yeah.
And I've always been a really introspective person, and I was even talking to my mom about this morning. For whatever reason, I've always done a lot of self-work, even from a young age. And so I've found a place, maybe through animosity. I dealt with some really, really ugly stuff in high school and in middle school.
Right.
And as much as I don't want to give credit to the people who treated me so poorly, I have to give credit to experiencing that,
right,
to maybe getting me where I am today.
I think that I think bullying comes in all forms. It doesn't have to be so extreme as we make it within a media-driven society. You know, being bullied can even come from family members on a slight level. It's passive aggressiveness. It's you know, treating your arrogance as something that you're better than somebody. You know, that's a form of bullying. Sometimes silence is a form of bullying. My mother used to give me the silent treatment, and it would devastate me to just not acknowledge me as a person. So I think I struggled with that, too, because it's like, how am I going to respect this person for treating me like shit? But it made me realize that I then don't have to return that to other people because I've experienced it.
Yeah, and I don't think you have to give them respect. But I think you have to give I think you have to respect the growth that you found.
That makes
give yourself
sense.
Credit.
Right.
Give yourself credit for the growth that is the result of what someone else did. So you don't have to give them credit for being terrible people.
Huh.
Because that's not
true.
Why?
Yeah.
You know, but
right.
Give yourself the credit for doing the work.
It's like, why respect them just on a human level?
Yeah.
Because they weren't being human towards you.
Yeah. You know, it's like if you get cut and you take care of it and you are responsible for making it heal up.
Right.
But you were never responsible for the cut in the first place.
Hmm.
So you can be proud of the work, but you don't have to be proud of the...
How you got...
The catalyst.
Right.
You know?
Wow.
So that being said, I think that allowed... I had to shed a lot of things in my life. To be ready for Jenny to move into it. And when she did, and when you know, where we are now, I say so many times, after so many things that have happened, like this year's just been crazy. I mean, I was on TV.
Right.
I was, you know, on Hypebeast.com. Will Smith has my sneakers.
Right.
Ed Lover has my sneakers.
Right,
and,
right.
You know,
it's like another new, like, sensory level of, like, whoa.
These crazy things have been happening, but... At the end of the day, no matter how many successes or failures happen, the absolute best part of my life is on my couch with my wife and my cats.
Oh,
so, like,
that's awesome, though.
Nothing,
right?
Nothing gets better than that for me,
right?
So everything is just icing on the cake,
right?
So, and I think that's why it doesn't. Those achievements don't define me,
right?
Which is also why maybe I'm able to slide through them,
without carrying them as a validation of like proving. Having to constantly, I think that's another thing with like the hustle. Like, I feel like we're constantly trying to be approved. We're constantly trying to like, look what I can do, look what I got, look at you know, my swag or you know whatever else. It's like look at all this shit I have to validate me, so you have to see my worth. And it's like, wait a minute, like you know, I'd rather be a stripped down version of that in order to continue to hustle and be appreciative of the things that come with that equal validation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I told somebody this the other day. I said, you know, it's kind of like being a rock star can make you money, but making money doesn't necessarily make you a rock star.
Oh, hell no.
So it's about it's about how you wake up every day. It's about how you treat yourself. I feel like I'm on top of the world.
Right.
All the time, it's because that's the way I treat myself,
and
in turn, it's how people treat me. It's that whole synergy, the ether, that kind of thing.
It's staying contained.
Yeah, and I'm guilty of being, you know, as apathetic as I am empathetic.
But that comes with the territory.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no person that's. You know, they talk a lot about reaching enlightenment. I think enlightenment is important to acknowledge, to reach. What happens is people stay enlightened, but they don't go past that. So it's like, you don't ever go past that enlightenment. Because I know a lot of grumpy, empathetic motherfuckers that are very you know, they come off like, man, they're so cold, they're so mean, but they're very empathetic people. Like, they do a lot of work for people that are disenfranchised, that are treated poorly, that are, they're just, that's just their demeanor. But they have accepted themselves past that point of enlightenment, realizing, like, there is nothing about me that's so exceptional to where I can't be empathetic towards people. It's just who they are. And I think that's, like, you have to have that balance of, you know, apathy and empathy, because you also have to have your personal boundaries up to protect you to not get taken advantage of or be perceived in the wrong light.
Yeah, or to be able to shed insecurities. Mm-hmm. I was talking with some of my friends about, you hear people say, like, oh, man, we look like a couple of jerks. Or, I don't want people to think I look stupid. Mm. Or whatever. And I always tell them, like, I'm like, first of all, if they do, the likelihood of anyone actually stopping you and telling you that
is nil to none. Is
almost nothing. So,
right.
So that's one reason why you shouldn't worry about this. And another one is, what makes you think that they're worried about you? You know, like, so when people
that's like the realest thing that you could ever, just, if you ever swallow anything in life, a life truth, a life lesson, swallow that first.
Yeah.
Nobody's thinking about you.
Yeah, and if they aren't, like, you know, I look around the room and I see people having coffee.
Mm-hmm.
That's as far as it goes, like, unless
right.
you have, like, some really dope sneakers on or something. Right. Like, if you don't, I'm not going to say anything about what the alternative is.
Right.
I just don't care.
Right.
And I assume
right.
that everyone else in the room feels the same way about
right.
me.
But we live in a culture we've created, especially in Western culture, that we are so focused on image and the idea of what that image is that we can never get past, like, yo, I like that red shirt. Yo, I like those sneakers. Or, yo, like, oh, man, they're reading, you know, they have this book to the side. And it's like we're so afraid to go up and just talk to this person. We're so focused on, oh, I wonder why, you know, she's wearing Birkenstocks. She must be some weird hippie that's right. gluten-free and lives on air. And, like, we go into this whole, like, dialogue. Yeah. We're like, maybe she wears Birkenstocks because she has bad posture and her feet can breathe. Like, we don't think about, like, that. We just go, I'm a judge you.
Right. And, you know, of course I'm not free of judgment either.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't assume to know anything about anybody.
Right.
I don't assume to know anything about politics because
right.
I think it's all probably lies anyway.
Right.
So
most
to,
of it
to,
is.
So to have an intelligent conversation about that is almost a farce. Like, we can't have an intelligent conversation about some shit we have no idea about.
Right. And even I do study politics, and I study especially, you know, within the civil rights movement and the period after America, after Reconstruction, up until the height of the civil rights movement, is something that I'm invested in just because it is constantly a direct narrative of everything that's happening consistently and present. Am I an expert? No. Do I get paid to speak about those things? No. Do I choose to be informed in order to have a non-biased opinion? Yes, so that I can speak fact. If somebody goes, well, this is... And I go, no. History proves, without saying it from a polarizing level, it's just a matter of having a conversation that says, look, these are the facts. You're on your own to research them. But I always say, know your facts before you open your opinions.
Mm. Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that open their opinion without knowing shit about what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah.
Constantly.
And that's
the culture we live in today.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy.
That's the culture we live in today. We live in a culture where it is, you can be trash, and it's okay. You can be complete trash. But because we live on that visualization, that imagery, you know, oh, man, they hustling hard. Look at what they have. Look at what they have. And it's like, that person is trash. You should not invest in nothing that person is bringing to the table.
Well, and I think that it's problematic because people are doing less self-work.
Mm-hmm.
They're having less genuine relationships.
Mm-hmm. They don't read.
They're not spending time just having conversations like this.
Right.
So they don't. They lose sight of the fact that your style, because I love style too. Obviously,
right.
fashion is really important to me.
Same.
You know.
Yeah.
But my style works for me because it's a reflection of of literally who I am. It's everything right. is
encompassing of yeah. what I like.
It might be embellishments, or it might be right. like some days I might feel like a little like, is this too much?
Right.
But I'm excited about how it feels on the right. day, not about how someone might perceive me.
Mm.
And that's what's most important. Like, mm-hmm. fashion is we talk about it a lot because in a negative light, mm-hmm. because we have you know all the skinny models and they're you know they're insecure and this right. and that and the fashion is and there's this stigma that fashion is almost bad
mm-hmm.
because we get wrapped up in the hype and right. all that.
But, and a lot of the shit looks the same.
But
just different branding.
Fashion is so fun.
Right. Especially when you take it on an individual level.
Yeah, if you do it because it makes you feel good mm-hmm. and it makes you look good. Like right. and you think you look good.
Right.
So, you know, people tell Jenny all the time, she's so stylish.
She is.
But she doesn't try.
She's just wearing what she wants to wear.
She wears whatever she wears, you know, wakes up right. and feels is feeling
right.
that day.
Right.
And the melding of her personality mm-hmm. and whatever she decides.
Because I think right put together, yeah. I think personality can be a fashion choice.
Yeah.
Like if you have you can have all the shit. You can have everything trendy. You can have the newest, coolest iPhone, Xfinity, whatever. You can have the bling. You can have all the shit. You can have everything straight, hot off the press. H&M, Gucci, whatever. If your personality is trash,
mm-hmm.
you look trashy.
Yeah, I think there's a really strategic balance there.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea that I look a certain way that mm-hmm. might cause a you know certain type of person
mm-hmm.
to make an immediate assumption about me.
Right.
I know I have not necessarily a responsibility because it comes natural to me mm-hmm. to blow them away with. courtesy
mm-hmm.
and empathy
mm-hmm.
and intelligence
mm-hmm.
and you know professionalism
mm-hmm.
and some people don't get that.
No.
That there has to be this balance, you know,
right.
like yeah, do it, but, you know, tattoo your whole body
right.
and put all the jewelry on it
right.
and all the designer stuff
right.
and all that, but if you're gonna do that, you have to understand people are gonna pass judgment on you
and
you
if
have to bring
yeah,
something
to
the
table yeah.
that is impressive. And that's
right.
when people
other are, than your look.
Yeah, because the combination of all of that is unbelievable.
Right.
That's a rock star.
Right.
You know?
That to me is a rock star because that to me is a rock star lifestyle. Because you are then encompassing the ability to not be jaded based upon what you have readily available.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I always say like there's fame and then there's being famous. Because you can achieve fame. Okay, you can achieve fame in whatever sense that fulfills you. You can buy it, you can politicize it, you can do it on your own with a phone and nice angles. I mean, there's 1,000 Instagram models on there right now. I see people all the time with iPhones doing photo shoots mm-hmm. because they want fame. But being famous to me carries a bigger weight of responsibility. Because you have to be consistently aware of who the fuck do you think you are.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're always seen. Like, people are always like, oh, man, like, you're Savannah famous. I don't give a fuck about that. That just means I know a lot of people, and I spend way too much time in the bar sometimes. Like, but I also realize that I do have a responsibility to myself not to just be seen as, like, this Savannah socialite that's just out hanging out, whatever. I'm also very intelligent, and I'm also going to make you aware of shit that you may not have been ignoring. And also, too, surprise, Susan, I'm black, too. So, like, which a lot of people forget. And it was, and I'm like, all right, this melanin ain't, okay, cool. Dreadlocks, all right, that's fine. This, no, not black at all. But it's like, I have to make sure to be responsible to myself to be more than this idea of famous mm-hmm. in this town. Because I'm not famous.
Well,
I just know a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, there's something. It sounds like you need something to serve you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that sounds cool.
Right.
But what is it doing for you?
Nothing.
And that's what.
That's what
you're clearly
right.
seeking.
Right.
Constantly, like more,
right.
like more out of that. And
yeah.
It's, yeah. So from an outside perspective, yeah, it does look cool.
Right.
But it's that like how does that feel for you? Do you want it to be more, right. want it to be more substance? You want mm-hmm. And I feel that way a lot too. You know, mm-hmm. I think that people, I often worry about, we talk about being in this city and the mm-hmm. kind of way things are. And a couple years ago, I heard someone call me pretentious, and it really hurt my feelings. And I let it kind of, because it was people that didn't know me.
Mm-hmm.
And it got me thinking about, like, do people think that because we're in a city filled with young kids with money, mm-hmm. this kind of thing, mm-hmm. that I just showed up and bought my way into this?
Mm.
Because it could be. Because right. people say, oh, this scat kid bought a tattoo shop. He's out here just...
Right. And this is before a scat on a love business. Stickers were everywhere.
Yeah.
Where, like, people were like, oh, thank you for doing this. It's like,
but
you
I
guys
were
around. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you guys were around before all of that.
I went to a public university, mm-hmm. you know, and I paid my way through it. And I didn't right. have a dime when I came to Savannah. And so this has been...
Right. An ongoing
a long time, and one of the hardest things that I deal with now, whether I'm talking to people about it or not, it's this eternal thing. Is like, and I think you probably attest mm-hmm. to this as well. Is mm-hmm. people are like, you're so cool, and you're like,
no,
yeah,
I'm not.
Yeah, but well, yeah. Or like, look at all the things you've accomplished, and
right.
look where you're at,
right.
and they kind of, and you want people to dig in,
mm-hmm.
and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know, yeah, well, you want to know.
Why do you think
do
I'm cool?
Do you know how they got here?
Yeah.
Do you know the
sacrifices that
yeah,
I had to make?
Yeah,
like,
let's talk about that.
Know,
do you care?
They don't
want to
hear about that. That's
well,
real
well,
life.
And young people don't, not only no. do they not want to hear about it, mm-hmm. it's not relevant.
Mm-mm. No, not anymore. It doesn't matter the struggle.
And that's scary. And
the
I think
struggle,
we see,
yeah.
Well, we see a lot of old people that we look up to now
mm-hmm.
doing the same thing. They're like, God, you guys don't understand how much work we put in.
Right. Or how the fact... That's the thing I say when people are like, oh, you're so cool. And it's like, not that cool. I still got a full-time job. Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, not that I don't enjoy my career. Like, I'm a 23-year career service industry bartender that's had hobbies of writing and creating and some type of media exploration on the side. Now, I'm like, yo, you put your time in. You're in a good place. Why don't you take the time to explore and expand on these hobbies to potentially flip it to where then your career is about your expression of your creativity? You know, really digging in more in your writing, really digging in and really actively loving yourself and spreading the gospel of that, you know? And it's like, and dealing, because, you know, my life, it's rough, you know? I'm separated from my children the majority of the time. That's hard for me. I was a full-time working mother. I'm good at being a mom, you know, so that's rough for me right now. But it's like, I always say those days where I feel like a failure, I go, I'm working for a better tomorrow today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working for a better tomorrow today, and I have to continue to grow as a person in order to facilitate that. It doesn't mean that, you know, life is perfect. It's messy, and it sucks the majority of the time. But especially living here, people, because I feel like people think because you're cool and you're accessible because you're choosing to make yourself accessible in a public situation, that you are approachable at all levels and that you owe them something because of those things. And it's like when I'm out to dinner, and this doesn't happen very often, but when I'm like out to dinner with my people and I got people like, and I'm sitting there having a real, real talk, it's rude to me to come up and be like, yo, what up? And you're like, you know, I get really, my ruffles get feathered, especially when I'm with my children. Say, hey, back up. Because for me, like, I'm focused. Like, you can tell, like, I put my phone away, I'm focused. And just, I find it very frustrating that people want you to be approachable and accessible, but they don't want any type of saturation. And it's like,
that's what's really scary about, like,
yeah,
like big fame,
right?
And I think about that and, right, and the times when I've been that person,
mm-hmm,
going up to somebody, hey, you know, what's up? How are you?
Right.
And I think that it's a hard balance to find, because
mm-hmm,
the people who want to do that are doing it because they think you're cool. They
right
want, like, there's a genuine place, mm-hmm, of, they feel like it's going to enhance their life somehow to come up and talk to you or learn something
which
from
is
you
great.
Or whatever.
Which is great. But when you're not trying to be saturated, that's when I just kind of, I call it server face.
Yeah.
I just give you the basics.
I do it too.
And it's just because I can tell you're not trying to, like, actually see me as the full person that I am, despite what you see as an image of, like, oh, they have it all together. It's like, no, player, I'm struggling to get, you know, to a place of security. I have a roommate. Like, I'm not, you know, I feel like, yeah, you present yourself the way that you want to feel to be. So I'm going to present myself to be in a level of, like, I got this. Am I there yet? Hell no. Am I humbled by it? Yes, because I can continue to work. But it's like, I just feel like sometimes living here, people don't take it for granted, the availability they have, don't really work on themselves.
Yeah, because there's so much space for that.
So much space. Yeah. And I get very, and I got caught up in it, like, go to work, go to the bar, hang out with a band, drink, wake up the next day, hungover as shit. Repeat. And then finally one day, my roommate was like, yo, I'm worried about you. And I'm worried that you're not being the best you can be. And for somebody to say that to me, I was like, I gotta recheck my priorities. And so I started to pull back, and I started to take care of myself. And what I found on the other side of it, though, there were people that were like, where you been?
Mm-hmm. And that's hard, too. It's scary. It's that FOMO, you know? Like, and then you start to feel like, oh, yeah, you're right. But that's the hardest part of the work is, like, is it time to separate myself from people who aren't helping me move forward? And if they're not helping by, like, actively helping, but causing you to stay stagnant.
Right.
By facilitating it.
Right.
You know, not that they're bad people or that whatever,
no.
You know, sometimes you wake up and you're like,
I could have just gone home.
Yeah.
Or I could have hung out with somebody else. And that's the thing, like, I talk about a lot on the podcast is toxicity and toxic people. And because a lot of the time you don't realize just who is toxic for you when you're toxic to yourself. Yeah, so when you stop being toxic to yourself, you step back and you go, oh my God. Because I had to do that. And I realized what was happening, that I was blocking the path of people that actually were going to enhance me to be my best self with genuine support. Not just because they're like, oh man, I believe in you and giving you those like simple one-liners. It was like, no, let me call you out on your bullshit. And I think that's kind of the downside of living in such a saturated, small area like this. Nobody calls anybody out on the bullshit, A, because they think they're going to miss out, and B, I think people are afraid to do self-awareness because then they might question their substance to themselves and think, I don't have anything, there's nothing available for me. But I was reading about how that's a big issue with a lot of people, especially female entrepreneurs. We don't think that there's enough abundance for all of us. And I think a lot of times what I've observed with toxic people and toxicity is that because you don't think there's enough or you're not good enough, so you become saturated in the toxic shit because that is enough. Like, that's just, that's it.
Yeah, you stop seeking it. As much.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you gotta let those people fall away.
Yeah, you do. And you have to be willing to, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I had to do that at one point. You know, I was like, I woke up and I realized I was, I don't know how long I've been completely consumed by, like, depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And the person I was working with was the problem. But, and I had issues in my relationship at the time, but was like, I was doing what the most toxic person in my life was doing, almost exactly. I would do the same. I would wake up and I would watch the news until all the stories were repeating, until I was just mad enough to go to work, and then I would go to work and I'd be mad at people in the car, and I'd be mad at people in the line of Starbucks, and be mad, you know.
You're just
mad. And I was like, this isn't me. Mm-hmm. And I realized it was crippling.
Right.
At one point, I And I had been reading that, like, anxiety takes years off your life. And I hit this bottom where I was like, I could die at any point. Mm-hmm. Like, just completely just stop living mm-hmm. because I'm so low. Just, and I didn't even see it coming. Mm. And I was reading some books at the time that really helped me. But I was able at that point to say, nothing is more important to me than never feeling like this again. So the next step was cut it out. Mm-hmm. And I cut out that person. Mm-hmm. And everything changed. Mm-hmm. Everything changed. Actually, I cut out a couple of people, but one relationship ended. That partnership ended. The shop became the butcher. Right. Everything started to move into place once I was able to get out of that, get away from that toxic,
right?
You know, thing.
Yeah, because and move forward. Because Jennifer Lewis, actress, musician, just brilliant, brilliant human being. She suffers with bipolar disorder, and the one thing she always struck me with, by saying, she said, "You don't realize shit stinks if you've been sitting in it a long time."
Oh yeah. I like the way that sounds.
She said, when I heard it, I went, damn. She was like, if you've been sitting in shit long enough, it doesn't stink. She's like, you got to get yourself out of there, because no one's going to come for you. No one's going to rescue you but you.
Yeah.
And I tell girlfriends this, that I'm like, I love you, but you got to stop worrying about a dude.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you from my own experiences. I'm telling you from a place of, like, I love you, but this is detrimental to you. And of course, you know, there's a little pushback or whatever, but I'm like, yo, you're sitting in shit. You're sitting in toxic shit. I'm not rescuing you, but I'm opening the door or the window to let you see what's out there. And I love this city. I do. You know, and I struggle with, like, maybe I should just move. But then I realize, it's like, what am I going to move to? What am I running from? What am I not dealing with? And the city's great. The city is great to really hustle and work on your shit. The downside is, like,
I don't know, though, because, you know, you say it was a small city with this big attitude and this kind of weird, you know, like you said, people think they're big.
Right.
For me, when I moved here, this is the biggest city I've ever been in.
Mm.
So it was a huge step up.
Okay.
I lived in this podunk little town in West Virginia with one stoplight and 700 people at the high school.
Right.
And, you know, there wasn't a black person or a brown person in a 20-mile radius in the high school.
That's not a lot of people.
Or 800, maybe. But, yeah, not a lot of people. So, yeah, there was no cultural diversity.
Right.
There was no, like, it was, there was no opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I'm concerned, there still isn't, in little pockets like that and stuff. And I was just telling someone the other day, well, not only moving here was huge for me. I felt like I was in this metropolitan place.
Yeah.
I was making big moves and stuff. But I think it was only until recently, there was a part of me that thought I would never see New York City in my life. I would always just watch it on TV.
Right.
And now I go there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to fly there. It's cheap from here. But, and people say, well, why don't you move there? Why don't you move to LA?
Right.
Why don't you move to these places where it seems like you fit in?
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling them, because with social media, I can be huge from anywhere.
Anywhere.
We don't have to go there. We don't have to go there and spend the money. I have a house, a three-bedroom house.
And stability.
I have a truck. I have things that I can afford that I would have to sacrifice if I didn't leave these places. I could fly there. So, you know, it's...
I do forget that. I do forget, growing up, I was in larger cities. Like, I was saturated with being around that. And I think that's why I love this idea of a small city.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up, my mom lived in Atlanta, my dad did movies in New York, and sometimes we would go to L.A. or Chicago or other places while in Washington, D.C., like while he was producing and scout location. I went to summer camp in Maine, I would go to Nova Scotia on bike trips, I would go to Toronto. Like, I was very exposed to a lot of things at a very young age. I did Outward Bound, where we'd go in the middle of the mountains and hike, so I was always kind of exposed to everything else outside of the center. And then when I came to Savannah for school, I was almost culture shocked because I was like, this is small. This is small. Like, for me, it was small because I had spent my teenage years meeting my dad in a location from Brooklyn to Manhattan.
What does he do?
He's a filmmaker.
Oh.
Yeah, he teaches writing. He was a filmmaker. He worked with 40 Acres and a Mule for a long time.
Uh-huh.
With Spike Lee. He helped start that. And then he now teaches at the University of Virginia. He teaches film
Wait,
production.
You know Spike Lee?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can get in touch with him?
No. No.
It's okay, I know somebody else who can.
That's okay.
It's okay, I'm already working that angle.
No, I mean, I love Spike. I mean, I grew up in those offices. I grew up on set. I grew up around a very awesome time within black media, especially in like the late 80s, early 90s, where there was a really large push that Spike was doing to creating platforms and facilities in order for American blackness to be discovered within itself, outside of it just being Afrocentric. It was like, let's explore every facet of just American blackness, as, you know, with relationships and families and the realities of that. So I grew up in that time, and then living here now on the other side of it and seeing certain things kind of circle back around.
Yeah.
It's amazing, like, because I was looking at my dad's Instagram and like going back and scrolling, and I was like, man, I remember when She's Gotta Have It posters and things in the house, the script, the books, like, and then seeing the TV show on Netflix.
That's
like,
so cool.
You know, like,
that's
that
so cool,
weird,
yeah.
You know, seeing Do the Right Thing on Netflix and being like, I was on set for, like, you know, like being on set for Crooklyn and see, it's
that's
a scene,
crazy.
Like, just,
Do the Right Thing's one of the greatest movies
oh,
of all
it's
time.
Amazing. And it's just like incredible. Reading scripts in my dad's office and being around that. And then the other side of it is just like, I always have this weird relationship with fame and being famous, just because being in it, it was something that I was like, I don't think I want that.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of it too, and there's this like, how do I?
Yeah, and I don't want, and for me, like right now, I love the small city, big attitude, because I can be here and be invisible when I want to be invisible, and I can be seen when I want to be seen. And I like that it keeps me humble enough to where I'm still thirsty.
And a little bit of work ethic in Savannah goes a
long way.
People ask me all the time, they're like, oh my God, how are you doing all this? I'm like, in this town, all you gotta do is show up to work.
On time.
That's it.
Early.
You don't even have, not even that.
Not even
just
that.
Just be there.
Just show up and be ready to work.
Because there's so many people who are just, eh.
Right.
You know? And that's an advantage that we have. Because, you know, you put yourself in New York, everybody's hustling as hard as you.
Everybody.
Competition is really heavy.
It's very hard.
So it's really
and some
important.
People are hustling twice as hard too.
Yes, you know, four or five side hustles and stuff like that. I mean, and I think I can hang, but I
don't want to.
I'm still building me here.
Right.
And planting myself in other places.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
what else do you want for the Butcher? Like, what else does Jimmy Butcher want within the hustle?
Because
you got the shoes, and you have that relationship to hip-hop and R&B, and that connection to that world, and then you have the tattooing and the art world, and then your exploration with just every facet of yourself, I feel like, from what I've seen and observed, is just always, you're always like, well, how do I touch on that? How do I put a sprinkle of the Butcher over here?
I'm just chasing dreams now. It's like,
yeah. Because the work you have put in, the struggle that people don't want to hear besides you doing, has allotted you to have that freedom. Now you're like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, it looks, I have no idea what it looks like. And you know, Josh and I were talking about this the other day, and we over the course of about 3 weeks, we developed a partnership and we dissolved it.
Right.
Because I was like, I need a manager. I got a lot of shit going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to figure out how to make that work. And then I sat down with him yesterday and said, I don't need a manager. I don't want a manager.
Right.
There's no way you can keep up with me because I don't know what I'm going to be doing tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to send you out on a wild goose chase to get this project. But I might wake up tomorrow and be like, I don't want to do that. I'll do something else.
Right.
And, you know, because he was like, I 100% understand. Mm-hmm. He was like, one day you're doing watercolors for a gallery in Jersey. And the next day you're painting walls. And the next day you're painting on all your clothes. And the next day you're making beats. Like, right. There's no way right. to keep up with.
And then on Tuesday, you did a tattoo.
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah. There's no reason for me to think that you right. should keep up with that. And
right.
and I'm certainly the creative director of this journey,
mm-hmm.
however it goes. Mm-hmm. And even though it looks like I do one project at a time, each thing is a step to connect me
right.
with more people, more energy, more passionate people. Mm-hmm. So if I'm tattooing backstage at the, you know, Post Malone show,
mm-hmm.
that's really cool. But I'm tattooing crew members who are on tour with, you know, just got off tour with Migos and Big
right.
Sean, and one guy, you know, has flown from the Justin Timberlake tour.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, so my mom was like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Well, here's the thing." She said, "Are you just gonna go and do, you know, tattoo backstage and keep giving away shoes and painting on them and just giving them to people for free? Because I'm not making any money doing
right.
these things."
Right.
And I said, "No, you don't understand. I get the shoes on Ed Lover. I get the shoes on Will Smith. I get, you know, shoes on the guys from Portugal the Man or whoever. I'm tattooing backstage here. I'm tattooing backstage mm-hmm. here. I'm building a network of people that potentially get to the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
whether if we build genuine relationships,
mm-hmm.
learn more about what I can offer,
mm-hmm.
and giving myself the opportunity for other people to want more from me. So
and eventually give me a paycheck.
Yeah. So, no, I don't want to just be a tattooer. I don't want to just be this. But
you don't want to polarize yourself into one area.
But if I'm working on a clothing line with, you know, with Josh, and mm-hmm. I'm tattooing somebody for the third time, and we've built a connection, and maybe I did them some sneakers, or maybe they're finally looking at me as an artist
mm-hmm.
instead of just a tattooer.
Mm-hmm.
But they're seeing the designer.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they like me,
mm-hmm.
and we develop a relationship, and then. Who knows? Post Malone's wearing a, you know, surveillance shirt, which mm-hmm. is the name of the brand we've been working on, and now we're selling 10,000 units, and I get a paycheck
right.
over here,
right?
And
to continue to facilitate
to move to the
core,
next,
yeah.
yeah, to move to the next step.
Right.
So, no, I don't want to be tattooing on tour buses because it's not fun.
No, I can
but,
imagine.
But you know, right now I think anyone in hip hop culture and streetwear and everything is everyone's looking at Virgil Abloh, and just a couple years ago he was a DJ and now he's the head of design at Louis.
Wow.
So and he came from hip hop,
right?
You know, he did the Yeezus cover, he did, you know, was kind of Kanye's protege.
He just kind of
Off-White hit the
yeah,
ground just
right. And I think that's a big thing you bring up, is just that multi-branching out. It's all collectively coming back to the base, which is you.
Mm.
You are the brainchild around the direction. But I think that if we limit ourselves in one narrow perspective, we, you know, we don't then reach out in order to go, oh, if I do a little of this in side B, that contributes to side A, which, you know, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
like, that contributes to D, and that contributes to F, but it all comes back to the core. It all comes back to you, and I think that is what being an artist is about.
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Well, and I think that...
Or a creator, so to speak.
Yeah, and the foundation of that is building genuine relationships so that you don't fall out of love with them. Because if we're chasing these opportunities, like I could go, you know, hustle my way into a situation where I'm doing artwork for somebody,
mm-hmm.
I don't really vibe with that.
Right.
That doesn't do me any good. I'm 38 years old. I don't have any time to
right.
waste on shit that doesn't make me happy.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to put me in the room, give me the opportunity to build a relationship. If it doesn't go well,
mm-hmm.
if you're not vibing on me,
mm-hmm.
as is, whether I'm completely swagged out or not,
right.
or you know, we're just having coffee or we're working on a design project, you're not vibing on me, all that tells me is this isn't the right move for me. It doesn't tell me I failed or I'm not good enough for this situation.
It says
oh, I don't want to be here. I'll go find somebody else who is feeling it.
And that's confidence. You know?
Yeah. And that's right. That's confidence. Like, I've reached out to some of my favorite rappers, and I've gotten kind of shrugged a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I did it again, mm-hmm. and I did it again
mm-hmm.
with the same people.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have this theory, like, you find that conversation that you think you want to be in, because mm-hmm. you don't really know. You shoulder your way into it, and if that doesn't work out,
mm-hmm.
do it again.
Mm.
And if it doesn't work out, try one more time. Because what do you have to lose? Nothing.
Right. Nothing.
And if they decide they don't like you and you're genuine the whole time, fuck them.
Fuck them.
That's so easy. Because you just move on to a better project that serves more of your soul.
Damn.
And that's, yeah, and that's what I'm pursuing, like, all
damn.
The time.
Damn.
Yeah. And I think that you're already moving there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
yeah.
I think, like, once you're able to do it because you, like, make sure that it's always just, I just love this.
Right. And, like, I love this.
Yeah.
I've tried it before, and now I realize, like, what you were saying is that, because a lot of time I struggle with making a personal decision of what's important to me and what makes me feel good. Because I think, like, I have to be available and I have to do this. I don't have a choice. And now I'm like, damn, Jimmy just dropped a life lesson on me. Like, I have the choice to choose what I can facilitate in order to continue to feel good about me.
Yeah. Yeah. If it doesn't feel like...
And also, too, like you said, if somebody, if you've approached them, just doesn't like you in your autonomy of being genuine about your passion, about what you're doing, fuck them.
That's not good for you. Yeah. Then that's not good for you.
Right. Right.
And I also think that so much of this comfort has come in realizing it's a slow process.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta be okay with that.
Yeah.
You have to look at how long it's taken and be really appreciative of that.
Right.
Instead of saying, if any of the things that have happened to me in the last 2 years had happened to me when I was 23, when I wanted them to happen, I would have probably completely blown it or not been able to really...
Like, crash and burn in it.
Or really use it.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I spent all the time up until now
mm-hmm.
being like, why isn't anyone paying attention to me? Every time something happens that I want it to happen, I realize I'm so glad they didn't, because
wow.
I wasn't ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and now I know what I want. Don't want false relationships. And I'm willing to sacrifice maybe a lot.
Right.
Maybe everything to make sure that their relationships are real.
Right.
I was.
Yeah, if you don't have a real relationship with yourself, how are you going to have a real relationship with anybody else?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, and they said, what's the ultimate goal for you?
Right.
I said, I don't know. Maybe Adidas shit.
Mm.
You know? And they're like, that's a pretty big goal. And I was like, yeah, maybe it's the ultimate goal. And they said, well, what would make you take that deal? How much money? I was like, I don't know. I don't even know what that looks like.
Right.
It's beyond my comprehension, but it is a goal. What would make you, would you be able to relinquish a certain amount of control for that?
Mm.
And because Josh, who was with me, said he doesn't let go of any control of any of his career projects on any level, so I think
right.
this could be maybe not what he thinks. And I said, you don't understand. There's certain parts in life. As long as I'm doing projects for free,
mm-hmm.
why would I give up any part of me?
Hell no. Right.
And as long as I put in the honest me out there every
mm-hmm.
single time, that time when Adidas calls me.
You're ready. You're ready.
Because
you're ready to give up a little
it's
control.
Because I've shown them
mm-hmm.
all of me so many times
mm-hmm.
that someone thought it was. And now I'm so flattered.
Mm-hmm.
That if they're like, we're only going to give you one stripe.
You'll take
it. I'm going to give you the best stripe you've
right.
ever seen.
Because you're ready for it.
Yeah. And
right. If you're not ready
yeah,
and you just want it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, because
they can
stuff,
give you 32 stripes.
Yeah, because all the stuff that people that's happening to me now, I'm still calling people.
Mm-hmm.
No one's calling me.
Mm-hmm.
This I put myself in all these rooms.
Right.
So when people start putting me in rooms, I don't know what it's going to feel like, but I have an idea, and I think that that's going to be the part where I'm able to say, I'm so grateful for this.
Right.
You finally noticed.
Right.
how can we collaborate? Let's work together. Because collaborations are the ultimate.
Right. That's a big goal. That's a big goal.
I mean, we're collaborating now.
We're collaborating now.
It's.
Yeah. I mean, you're helping me.
Yeah, and I mean.
And you're helping me by, you know, what by even just putting this out there, but you in having this conversation, and I can go back and listen to it, and I take notes on everything that I do and try to apply it within this life of active self-love that I really am focused on, is like, how can I use what someone who is a level above me and be like, all right, I'm going to look to you in an inspiration mental way and be like, how do I do, like, how can I be like the butcher?
Yeah.
And I mean, how can I be like, how can I cut through the bullshit like the butcher?
And, you know, and I can learn from you, like, what kind of things are you dealing with? Why?
Right.
What is your... I'm already thinking about how daunting it looks in Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
From your perspective, having grown up and seen so much.
I still have to get myself to just realize it's not overwhelming.
Yeah.
And there's that I can be enough here. I don't have to think in terms of like New York and LA and being around this environment that I was raised in. It's got to be big. It's got to be huge. I got to figure out like contain it here and find what vibes with you here in order to facilitate continual growth.
To share it, yeah.
To share it and to continue the growth. And to answer the call when it comes.
Yeah. So. But yeah, because I can remember dreaming like the things that you experienced when growing up.
Dude, it
sounds amazing.
It's a mindfuck.
But it can. But now it's a bigger mindfuck than it ever was, because at that point, you know, you didn't realize that that exposure once you felt trapped was that's the reason you feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the only thing that I'd ever seen was MTV.
Right.
I'm a product of that.
Right.
I'm a product of that completely.
Right.
So, you know, like, and I'm so proud of that. It's funny because I recently read Mark Echo's book, and I didn't realize I was a big fan of Mark Echo. I think I had like one Mark Echo backpack that I bought at TJ Maxx in like 2005. But
I remember that brand.
Well, you probably don't know that Mark Echo started the Lyricist Lounge and Complex Magazine, and he's a billionaire. So for all the people who were like, "Where's Mark Echo?"
He's busy. Like,
he's an angel investor
right
now, living in New Jersey, just like laughing at everybody who thinks he was a flop. And maybe I didn't get all those facts exactly right. But
at the same time,
so
he just didn't limit himself in one area.
Well, he also had, you know, certain opportunities that, like, when I was in podunk-ass West Virginia, I got my first airbrush. And I was at home airbrushing all my clothes and doing Black Bart Simpsons and Cheetahs and shaving lines in the sides of my hair in the garage and like
that's deep.
And I was going to school.
Right.
And everybody was like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?
Right.
Mark Echo was in New Jersey doing the exact same thing.
Damn.
And going to and ended up at a party with the guys from Velvet DeVoe and they were like, "What's up with this shirt?" I'm not mad that I wasn't Mark.
Actually,
I'm really excited
that you're Jimmy Butcher.
That in a parallel universe, we had the same trajectory and with the same with similar opportunities. What could I have done? And I look at that and say, not shit, I missed the boat, but it gives me more confidence to be like, I still have all that, and I still have all that to offer. So that's why I'm, you know. I have this theory about 12 years old. I used to call it a theory of 12. I developed it around, like, I think I was 32. I told you that I released a lot of toxicity from my life and stuff. Because when I was 12, I moved to this town that I told you that I went to high school in, from another small town that wasn't much bigger.
Wow.
It was only an hour away. I moved to this town and I was hip-hop kid, and I had all my clothes with graffiti all over them with markers and stuff, and I was like riding BMX bikes and playing soccer, and I had long hair and my ears pierced, and it was just like
chilling.
What I thought was just a regular dude.
Right.
Well, when I got to this town, it was like, no. No. And
they were like, no, we're not having that.
And I got jumped.
Mm-hmm.
I got threatened on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
I had a teacher call me a nigger in front of a class.
Wow.
I had,
that's deep.
I had threats in my locker that said the KKK will rise against you. I had people call me Puerto Rican. I was the blackest person this town has ever seen. I swear.
You're like, yo, I'm white.
I know. And it was the first time that people started criticizing me for what they,
right.
what they thought was trying to be black. And what I didn't understand was, I like this music. And it never crossed my mind that I was trying that to other people. I was trying to be something that I wasn't, because I was just being me. Well,
hold on one second. Hey, what's up, y'all? It's Naima Screamo, and welcome back to Blah Blah Blah. Thank you so much to listening to my podcast with Jimmy Butcher from the Butcher Tattoo Shop and Gallery. I appreciate y'all. Thank you so much. 43 plays. I don't know how many people listened to the whole thing, but you guys definitely gave me a lot of feedback, and I really appreciate it because I had a lot of fun talking with him, and part two should be coming up sometime soon. You just have to bear with me and be patient because I have a lot going on. So today, I want to talk about life. I'm going to talk about life and just talk about some things that I think that we seem to forget as people grow and change and adapt and move forward. And I want to talk about life in the sense of dealing with confrontation with people, dealing with this sense of entitlement from people with confrontation, and dealing with people and their sensitivity of their own place of entitlement of being. That's a lot. Okay, let's talk about confrontation. Confrontation is something I feel that we have forgotten how to do face to face without taking it personally. Sometimes some confrontation is personal. They are directly talking about something that you have done, may have done, and they don't like it, so they want you to stop doing that. That is personal. But then there's confrontation when it comes to the facilitation of work, the facilitation of responsibility, and the facilitation of hindering the job to be done and the work that needs to be done because of taking something personal when it doesn't need to be. Confrontation has now been put in a place of exposing someone and canceling someone and then saying that we can't value their opinion because we've confronted them via social media or something they've posted or something they've said in a comment or something that they have had an opinion on in 2006. Now, that's irrelevant to what you're actually trying to have a conversation with them about. When it comes down to work and the facilitation of work, you cannot take it personally when someone criticizes you or calls you out on your lack of work ethic or the sense of entitlement of position because of a title that you have. That don't mean shit. Work is disposable. You are disposable in any job or career that you have. There are CEOs and founders of companies that have been ousted because their work ethic and the way they were conducting their work was not in compliance to where the company is going, headed in the present, or whatever. So don't ever mistake the fact of being comfortable as not being disposable, because you can be disposed of at any point in time. You can be fired or let go at any point in time. So don't get complacent in the idea of job security anywhere. Ever. Like, seriously. But we live in an age where people are very closely in connection with each other due to social media and this routine of being around each other all the time. You spend a majority of your time with the people that you work with. So you're going to create a bond and a closeness and a connection. And what I found working in service industry over the last 23 years is that you either make really good friends that you continue to be friends with outside of work, or you make really good work friends, or there's just people you just kind of like, hey, well, how's it going? What's up? Cool. How was your weekend? All right, I'll see you later. And that's it. The problem that is happening with confrontation at work and the people that you work with, and they may be your friends, is that outside issues are trickling into the inside of your job. And what happens is that pettiness, middle school bullshit, and emotional stuntness then infiltrates the workplace, and it becomes a place of contentment and toxicity. And then when you confront someone that you may have a certain relationship with about their shittiness at work, they take it personally, and then they want to turn it into, well, this isn't my problem. I have this going on. This is why I can't facilitate this job. And I don't understand. I thought we were friends. And it's like, no, this is not the fucking time for this. I just need for you, when we're at work, to do your job, to do the basics of your job, to function. And then when we clock out, we can move on and talk about whatever you want to talk about wherever else. Because what people don't realize is that even if there is something going on and you think that you're hiding it, people can tell when there's a problem. Customers, your other employees, and the shit spreads like a cancer if somebody's in a bad mood and they can't check it at the door. And then when you confront them on it and they want to turn around and write some passive aggressive shit on the internet or make it seem like you're stupid in what you're doing simply because you stated an opinion about a routine of how the job was functioning, you stated your opinion, you got feedback on it, and for you, the person that brought it up, that just is like, hey, I want to confront this issue, let's move on from it, and if nobody likes it, we're going to move on. The subject has been dropped. And then when people continue to chatter and talk, and it makes it seem like you don't understand the logistics of something, that's when you create a problem. And then when you keep going on, and you keep going on in this very passive aggressiveness manner around the person without actually talking to the person, that's when you piss somebody off. And that's when they take it personally, because not only are you not dealing with the confrontation at hand, with the issue at hand, and then when the person says, I have dropped it, I don't care, let's move on, I stated an opinion, and you keep going, that's when you create a problem. That's when you create the issue. And that's why people don't know how to confront each other. So you can't take it personally when it comes from a work aspect if somebody is confronting you about something that has to do with work, especially when they say, okay, that's fine, I'm going to move on from it. Don't talk to people like they're stupid, and don't talk to people like they don't know what they're doing. They clearly have had this job of employment for more than 60 to 90 days. So they're capable of what they're doing. In fact, they're more than capable. A lot of the times, they just wanted to state an opinion to shake it up a little bit. If it doesn't work, cool. Let's just go about our business and have a great shift. Now, when it comes to the confrontation of something that you're doing personally to somebody, that is when it's a very different conversation. As friends, lovers, family members, whatever, your relationship with somebody, if you do something that hurts somebody's feelings and they say, hey, you've hurt my feelings and this is why, and you explain to them, you hurt my feelings because you didn't acknowledge my feelings when I expressed to you that I do not like it when you make plans for us without consulting me. I do not like it when you talk about me behind my back. I do not like it when you make assumptions about me and then go and talk to other people about it and not talk to me. I do not like it when you create unnecessary problems that we don't need to have because you are unable to communicate about your real feelings about what we have going on. Or somebody's pointedly doing things to you, towards you, that are directly impacting the nature of your relationship. That is when you can take some shit personally. But taking it personally and not addressing the issues are going to continue to create the problems that you're going to have with whoever you're having this issue with. And sometimes it's a small miscommunication. Sometimes people mishear the wrong things. Sometimes they read a text wrong. Because you can look at your phone and reread and read a text, then it comes out to you very, very fucked up. And the person's like, no, that's not what I meant at all. So you have to really understand the difference between confrontation when it comes to hindering a process and confrontation when it comes to a personality trait or when somebody poignantly hurts you. Now, in those circumstances where someone is poignantly hurting you and they're hurting your feelings and you have a personal relationship with them and they refuse to acknowledge the fuckery of which they have caused, that's when you can take it personal. But when you take it personal because you just simply don't like the way they do something or somebody the way they do it and it has nothing to do with you, then you need to check your own shit. You need to check your own priority of focus and your entitlement. Because then you feel entitled to have an opinion, to have a feeling based upon something that has nothing to do with you. Because a lot of the time, you have nothing else going on, so this is the only thing that you have to sit around and do and talk shit and complain and state your opinion when nobody really gives a fuck. That's entitlement. That's entitlement. Because you want to be validated even though no one's acknowledging you and your needs and wants and desires in this moment because it has nothing to do with you. So discern yourself between the two. Because what happens in life is that we go through transitions and we move forward and our relationships change and the dynamic of ourselves change and the dynamic of how we approach situations change. I myself am going through that right now. I've been going through an existential crisis for the last, 3 months. But the reason that my dynamic has changed for myself is because I had to shift my focus of self-discipline. I had to shift my focus of self-empowerment and I had to shift my focus of self-will. I want to go back to school. I want to go back to school in January. And that means that my entire life schedule is going to change. My balance of focus is going to change. So I cannot put the priority of my feelings of attachment and entitlement into my job and my interpersonal relationships at work, because that's just kind of irrelevant when it comes to the bigger picture of me growing and moving forward as a person. And I cannot continue to take things personally that people do from an entitled sense of being comfortable in their position at work when I have bigger shit on my plate to take care of in order for me to facilitate the future Naima's goals, wants, and desires. Because if I stay in the presence of petty, I will never be able to not be stalled in my forward momentum. Because you can do that. You get caught up in the rhetoric and you get caught up in the bullshit and you just stay there and you're stuck and you're sitting around and you're like always grumpy and feeling jealous and envious and you're wondering why can't you just have what you want when you want it, because you're here, you're available, everybody knows you're here, and I don't want to feel that entitlement of existing. So if you find yourself in this weird kind of gray area of transition, what's happening is that you are now realizing the difference between confrontation based upon entitlement, confrontation based upon somebody taking something personal, and confrontation based upon the productivity in order to facilitate the things that need to get done in the environment that you're in. That is called growth. You're growing. And sometimes when you're growing, it creates boundaries that you're unsure of yet, but you know that they're safe boundaries and that you can then go forth within those boundaries in order to continue the forward momentum. That's the key. That's the key to transition, is that relationships are going to change. Relationships are going to get stronger. Relationships are going to get weaker. You're going to see flaws in relationships that you either want to improve or not improve, or you're going to learn how to communicate and confront people without it being a personal thing. And it's more just like, hey, I want to reconnect with you. Hey, I want to have this connection with you. Just because the dynamics of who you are and what you believe in and your boundaries are changing doesn't mean that some relationships have to completely fall apart. What means is that the relationship then has to grow, the friendship has to grow in itself, but everybody has to be on the same page. And even after communicating and confronting the issues at hand, if you two aren't on the same page, then you just kind of have to let the relationship fall where it's going to fall. Now, I know that some work environments are very fucking toxic and you can't escape it without going to a new job. For me, I ain't going nowhere. For me, I love my job. And any job sometimes is toxic because you're surrounded by whatever's going on in that environment. And if you strive to not get caught up in it and to really acknowledge and address it and go, I'm not going to get caught up in this. I'm going to continue to move forward and work in this environment and try to create the work environment that's not toxic, that everybody can thrive and be happy in. And then that way you don't take that burden of toxicity home with you when you're off the clock. That's really important too. And also to realize that you don't have to be friends with everybody that you work with. You don't have to be close with everybody you work with. You don't have to be buddy-buddy with everybody that you are around for 6 to 8 hours at a time with. You don't have to have that type of relationship. It's okay. It's okay because you have a life outside of your job. And you have to have a life outside of your job. Otherwise, you're just so caught up in everything that's happening in this environment, you have no sense of autonomy to yourself and a release of what you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And that's very important to do. You have to have things that are purposeful and meaningful to you that aren't caught up in your routine of work. You have to have things that are purposeful and meaning to you that aren't caught up in the routine of getting up and functioning and going and doing and living and just kind of existing. You have to create purposeful and meaningful moments in order to be able to go into your job and not feel as if you're being dragged down by this job because that's all that you have. You can create purposeful and meaningful moments outside of yourself without taking it personally when things are stressful in your job environment. You can take purposeful and meaningful moments when the shit's hitting the fan or when you feel like you're stuck in a routine. You have to create those purposeful and meaningful moments outside of that place of employment because you don't want to be stagnant in what you've been doing because that's what you think you are owing to people. And that's not healthy for anybody. Because the thing that you have to continue to remind yourself is you don't owe anybody a motherfucking thing. And no one owes you shit. Okay? No one owes you shit and you don't owe anybody a motherfucking thing. And when dealing with confrontation and entitlement and all these things is that we have to remember that we live in a society where everyone feels entitled. Everyone feels like they're owed something simply because they have the availability to be seen via social media. And they have this accessibility and they think that they have the best of the best. So therefore, they need to be treated a certain way. And they're going to confront you when their needs aren't being met, even though they're superficial fucking needs. And a majority of people within American society have the same level of autonomy of entitlement due to the advent of technology. That being said, fuck that. Fuck all that. What we have to remember with transition and growing into ourselves and changing and the dynamics of our lives are going to change and with entitlement and confrontation is that we have the ability to not take it personally when someone has a superficial need based upon a superficial role of entitlement. Okay, we have the ability to not let that engulf us in our own sense of worth, in our own sense of validation, in our own sense of our own standing. We can create those boundaries because a lot of the time we don't realize is that people a lot of times when they're seeking this superficial sense of entitlement and this superficial sense of confrontation is that they're not sure of themselves and their self-worth and value is based upon who can see them, what they can be seen for, and how they are perceived based upon what they have and how their image is created for the world in order to be validated as people. And when you begin to shed away those concepts of what that means, the confrontations that you then start to have because you've created boundaries are very much so based in a sense of owning your autonomy of yourself, knowing that you are validated within yourself and that you want to point out any type of flaws or issues so that you don't have to continue to deal with them in the future. And if they do come up again, you go, all right, I've talked to you about this before. But if you choose to continue on this behavior, then I'm just going to continue and acknowledge it. And we're just going to move on from there. Because you're not taking it as a personal flaw against yourself, because you have acknowledged someone else's superficial anger towards something that they have created based upon their sense of entitlement. Because it has nothing to do with you at all. It has nothing to do with you. What it has to do with is them, A, feeling entitled to confront you over this superficial issue. B, their reaction, because you're not getting upset and you're not taking it personally and you're not upset at what they're upset about. So they're going to get even more enraged. And C, the fact that you're not going to sit there and be in presence of the petty. Fuck all that. Like, what's the real issue? What's really going on? And if it's something that can be fixed, if it's something that can be acknowledged, if it's something that can be changed, if it's something that we can just move on from, let's do those, one of those things. But you cannot take it personally of everything that is happening. You cannot have an angry reaction to everything that's happening in your life and that's around you. It's exhausting. It's exhausting. And it makes you appear shallow. And it makes you appear as if you have no depth of understanding of yourself. And then when you're confronting people based upon that lack of depth, no one's going to respect where you're coming from. At all. They're not going to respect your opinion. They're not going to respect you as a person, even if you're coming from a truthful place of confrontation, but because the bias has been set based upon your reactions to everything else, small, big, and in between. So when we're talking about confrontation and we're talking about entitlement, we really have to step back outside of the situation and say, is this something for me to take personally, or do I need to address an issue where someone is poignantly hurting my feelings based upon a behavioral action that they're doing? And they may not either be acknowledging it, or B, they may know it, or C, they may know it and they just don't give a fuck. And if it's C, you can tell them to fuck off. So tread carefully, but keep growing. Because the presence of petty is very real. It's very real. And when you're transitioning and seeing yourself and growing as a person, you're going to have a feeling of guilt. You're going to have a feeling of shame. You're going to have a feeling of adjustment to where you still feel like you're not deserving of the growth and transition and being able to confront anyone from a place of personal self-respect and honesty within you, because you still feel like, well, they're still seeing me as the person that I was, not the person that I am. And that's not for you to deal with at all. What you have to then do is continue to grow and expand and continue to put up boundaries in order to get to the future you and your goals and your wants and your desires and your needs. Because if we limit ourselves in the transition and we stop here where we are, we're never going to get to the future of where we can be. Our present won't catch up to where we're going. And we have to tell ourselves, it's okay. It's okay to not want to read the news. It's okay to not want to deal with this person's bullshit. It's okay to not acknowledge their pettiness and their need for validation. It's okay to not respond to something that is just irrelevant to whatever you have going on with you that day. It's okay to confront somebody when they're hurting your feelings. It's okay to communicate to somebody that their presence of petty is not where you want to be in. And if they want to do that, they need to go find their partner in pettiness crime. It's okay to do those things, because you're going to get pushback no matter what direction you go in. And you're going to get pushback when you acknowledge the things that are frustrating you with people that can't acknowledge themselves, because they're going to take it personally, because they have not taken the time to find their self-worth and value and respect in order to have healthy communication with other people. So then they're always going to feel attacked. And that's part of the game. That's part of the gamble of saying, I want to be better for myself. I want to venture to impress myself. And I want to be able to create and facilitate autonomy within myself to have healthy boundaries in order to have healthy relationships and healthy communication skills in order to facilitate the things that I need in order to create the life that I want. And that's it. And it's frustrating. And it's hard. I mean, you know, fuck. It's hard. It's real hard. And you want to give up. And you want to just be like, fuck it. But fuck it, don't pay the bills. Fuck it, don't create savings. Fuck it, don't create choices that are healthy. Fuck it, doesn't create the ability to find ways to get out of a situation that's not healthy. Fuck it, doesn't provide you the strength and the ability to enjoy your own company. Fuck it, doesn't give you the ability to try new adventures and grow and try new hobbies and expand on things you want to know. Fuck it, does not give you the ability to create healthy boundaries. And fuck it, doesn't give you anything except bullshit and toxicity, and nobody got time for that. So acknowledge the next time you're in a confrontational situation. Is the person coming from a place where they're taking it personally? Or are they coming from a place of where they need you to be engaged in order to facilitate the things they need to get done in the work environment? Or are they in the presence of petty? And if they're in the presence of petty, then just say, hey, yo, I don't think this is personally about me. I think that you may have something else going on. Why don't we address the real issue? And if there's not a real issue to address, then you should probably acknowledge the person that's creating the problem that you're having with and not use me as a punching bag. And if that person chooses to say, well, that's not the way it is, or I don't understand why you're coming to me that way, or I just don't think we're friends that we were, then fuck it. Fuck it. Because if you have nothing to lose and nothing to gain from that relationship with that person, then who fucking cares what they think? Because I surely don't. And the relationships that you kind of see some cracks in, friendships that you see some cracks in, you can either choose to seal the cracks with having a healthy confrontation about how can we reestablish this relationship, how can we communicate better, how can we move forward. Or you can just let the relationship fall and the friendship fall where it's going to fall. That's healthy too. But we have to know the difference of shallow confrontation versus in-depth confrontation and entitlement based upon that confrontation as well. It's a lot, but it's worth knowing the difference. Other than that, I don't know. I'm okay. I'm getting okay. I'm going to be okay. Hopefully I can record more podcasts and get my shit together and figure out some stuff to talk about. I want to have some guests. That's for damn sure. Because I feel like I work really well with other people. But I'll also keep recording these little blurbs of the shit that I'm going through. And for the record, if you're taking this personally and you think I'm personally attacking you, then that's either a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know what to tell you, but don't ever take anything I say personally. I'm just trying to help anybody who wants a little push and a little boost in life. And if you are taking it personally, I don't really fucking care, because I'm not talking about anybody specific. I'm not talking about anybody in general terms. I'm just talking about my own reflection of life and its absurdities. So, you know, like, that's all we could do. That's all we could do before we lose our mind. So, thanks for listening to blah, 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 and keeping up. But yeah, just try to do some work in knowing how to confront people and how to not take that shit personally. Because the quicker you figure that out, the happier you'll be. And the more you'll be able to go through life not taking everything personally, because that shit is exhausting and that sense of self-importance is shallow and irrelevant. Trust me. Trust me. It is. So go have a fruitful day.